Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the December 8th, 2012 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, welcome back to another hour of discussion about all things related to our space program, not only here at the Kennedy Space Center and Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, but everywhere else, including in space itself. If it has something to do with spaceflight, this is the place to be each Saturday at this time. On tap for the next 53 minutes or so, we're going to continue our focus on the future direction that NASA may be headed towards following the presidential election, a topic that has been at the forefront of space news, especially this past week, with the variety of events such as the 40th anniversary of Apollo 17 and the release of a pair of reports that discuss in depth the situation at NASA right now. My good friend and former boss, and I should probably be careful to say that in the right way, Elliot Pullum of the Space Foundation is standing by at his home in Colorado to join us a little bit later in the program to, well, talk about one of those two reports, which suggests a mission for NASA in a way that I think few of any reports of recent memory, in any case, have dealt with on that subject. And a little bit later, we'll share an update on when the next launch from Cape Canaveral will be. And I'll tell you right now that it's good news. It's this week, but the weather forecast isn't ideal. Of course, we'll wrap up the program with our weekly Q&A feature called Terminal Count. And along the way, as always, we welcome and appreciate any thoughts, questions, or comments you might have about our space program. Feel free to give us a call by dialing 321-768-1240, or if you prefer to send us an email, the address is spacetalking@aol.com. In the meantime, I'm going to share my voice now with you as I offer, well, my almost but not quite weekly broadcast blog, Orbital Inclinations. Well, 40 years ago, yesterday, at 12:33 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Florida's Space Coast, and indeed the entire southeast of the United States, lit up in a way never seen before and not seen since, as Apollo 17 lifted off from Kennedy Space Center to begin our nation's final lunar landing mission of the 20th century. During the next 12 days, Gene Cernan, Ron Evans, and Jack Schmidt successfully flew to the moon, circled it, landed on it, walked on it, drove on it, returned from it, and safely splashed down in the Pacific Ocean, where the command module America was recovered by, well, the USS Ticonderoga. Flying the lunar module Challenger, Gene and Ron spent 3 days living and working on the lunar surface in a region of the moon known as Torus Littrow. At the conclusion of their third and final moonwalk, before climbing up the ladder of Challenger to become the most recent man to walk on the moon, you know, I've always refused to call him or introduce him as the last man, Gene Cernan offered some words that to me were as historic as those uttered by Neil Armstrong 3 years earlier. Gino said, "I take man's last step as I take man's last step from the surface back home for some time to come, but we believe not too long into the future. I'd like to just let what I believe history will record, that America's challenge of today has forged man's destiny of tomorrow, and as we leave the moon at Torus Littrow, we leave as we came, and God willing, as we shall return, with peace and hope for all mankind. Godspeed the crew of Apollo 17. Well, now, just as we lamented during the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission in 2009, here we are again, still, heading in a direction whose path remains uncertain, or at the very least lacks consensus within segments of NASA, the space community at large, Congress, and the White House. Yes, we've had some movement in a positive direction with such developments as SpaceX and its Dragon capsule demonstrating that a new commercial way of getting into and out of space is possible. And yes, NASA is making slow but steady progress toward designing and building the hardware that is supposed to return us beyond Earth orbit. But there still seems to be too much hand-wringing over exactly where it is we're heading and for exactly what reasons. And despite pronouncements that NASA is to be taking us to an asteroid by 2025 and to Mars by the mid-2030s, there still seems to be too little enthusiasm within the space community about the plan or confidence the plan will survive future budget battles. So during this week that we remember Apollo 17, which was the end of an era of space exploration that was an anomaly in human history and only made possible by a confluence of events that will not be repeated, two significant and credible space-related organizations released reports that offered fresh looks at NASA, its purpose, and its capability to accomplish all it has on its plate. On Tuesday, the Space Foundation released a report called Pioneering, Sustaining U.S. Leadership in Space, that suggested very specific ways and rationales for NASA to focus its efforts on one particular aspect of spaceflight, which they called pioneering, which they define in a four-step process that involves gaining access to targeted destinations, learning about those places to enable subsequent missions, coming up with useful technology to use at those places, and then handing off those technologies to others who can then fully take advantage of the resources and benefits that each destination offers. In my opinion, the greatest strength of this report is that it does not address or attempt to prioritize specific places we might go, but instead offers a vision for how NASA can best be enabled to reach for any destination in space that we choose. Then on Wednesday, the National Academy of Sciences released a report called NASA's Strategic Direction and the Need for National Consensus, a title that I think truly summarizes the gist of the document, which also goes on to say that NASA is spread too thin, needs to be more efficient in what it does, should partner more with others to share costs, and could use more money. Both reports take different approaches for what could be called the NASA problem, and not all of their conclusions and recommendations line up with each other. But taken together, it's clear the two very different, smart, and objective organizations have both found NASA to be an agency that needs to have its mission more clearly defined and then better supported with the necessary organization and resources to accomplish its more refined goals. All of this took place in a week also in which a private company announced that it would offer round-trip flights to the moon for about $750 million a seat, and the people behind the company actually have some credibility about them in terms of their technical knowledge and entrepreneurial savvy. SpaceX won a pair of launch contracts from the Air Force this week that marked another first for the commercial space company. And scientists say Voyager 1 is getting stronger indications than ever before that it is finally at the very edge of our solar system and is ready to enter true interstellar space after launching from Cape Canaveral more than 35 years ago and traveling so far 11 billion miles. With Apollo 17 and Voyager 1, with two important reports released about NASA, and with more news about what may be possible with spaceflight in the years to come, the past, present, and future of space aligned this week in an inspiring and thought-provoking manner. I can't wait to see what happens next. And that's Orbital Inclinations for this week. Hey, Elliot Pullum of the Space Foundation will be joining us next here on the program to talk about his organization's report. Please stay tuned. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB.
Catch the podcast, Space Talk, in the on-demand section at WMMBAM.com. If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, everyone. 321-768-1240, the number to call to participate in the program today. You can also send your questions or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, you know, it was just a few weeks ago, just before the election, that the Space Foundation's Elliot Pullum was on this program. And during that appearance, as we talked about where NASA is and should be heading in the future, he kind of teased us with the thought that the Space Foundation was working on something very special that dealt with some of those ideas and asked us to stay tuned. Well, this past week, again, as I just mentioned, during orbital inclinations, Elliot's team released a white paper covering some thoughts on what NASA's overall mission should be and how the space agency might best be organized to accomplish that mission, which the Space Foundation suggested should be all about pioneering. So we thought we'd get into some of the details and to try to help us understand it all. Elliot does return to Space Talk today, joins us on the phone once again from his home in Colorado Springs. Elliot, good to have you back.
Jim, always good to hear your voice.
Wow, what a great week for the Space Foundation. Lots of interesting news. Sigourney Weaver, among the interesting tidbits of news, teasing your event next April.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having Sigourney on the show, and we'll be announcing another Grammy Award winner for our opening ceremony, so keep tuned.
We'll do
everything we can to make that a fun event.
Yeah, it is. It's a big deal. Congratulations, of course, to the entire team on this report. We're gonna get into it and try to get into it bit by bit, detail by detail, and hopefully for the folks at home who are not inside the space program, try to explain what this all means. First of all, this report about pioneering. First, tell us, Elliot, a little bit about how it came about, kind of what inspired you guys to write it, and how long have you been working on it?
Well, you know, Jim, this is something that I've wanted to do for a lot of years, being involved in the space program, being involved in advocacy, and watching the many changes as people are elected and administrations come and administrations go. And, you know, one of the great costs to the agency is this cost of constant perturbation where programs are stopped and started and not completed and things are thrown away. And so we wanted to look at the history of that really since the moon landing. And so we went back and looked over the sweep of 43 years at what had gone on, differences between what was proposed and what was actually appropriated, program starts and stops, and tried to find some meaningful ways to suggest that we could restore a focus and some management discipline and some financial flexibility so that NASA could be as successful as everybody would like it to be. And I think that's one of the starting points for the conversation is that, you know, looking throughout that sweep of history and talking to over 100 senior executives from around the space community, around the world, it's very clear that everybody very passionately wants NASA to succeed.
Yeah.
And where we get caught up is that we sometimes have differences of opinion of how that needs to happen. And so what we tried to do was to find ways that we could really stabilize around a core mission that was as crystal clear as the mission of going to the moon, and yet something that could be sustained over time. And so we came up with this concept of pioneering and a series of recommendations that are in the report.
You spent a little time on the history. You paint a very interesting picture at the beginning of the report about how we've gone from being able to walk on the moon to basically we have to hitch a ride with the Russians to get into space. You didn't talk a lot about in detail about, and it's come out in other reports, about really the billions of dollars that have been wasted because of this change of direction. We keep talking about, even the NRC report this week that I mentioned earlier talks about we don't have a clear consensus, a clear direction. You didn't go into the specifics of a specific destination, and we can talk a little bit about that, but if you were to summarize pioneering, the 76-page report or whatever it is, in kind of the high-level soundbite, the elevator speech, what would you tell the common, if you will, folks that don't know about the space program, what it is that NASA should be doing, in your opinion?
Well, we came up with this doctrine of pioneering because we think it can give a laser focus to what the agency is doing. If you look at the current situation, 28 so-called strategic orientations. Nope, you have 28 orientations. None of them are strategic. You have an agency that has had so many things inserted to the Space Act, inserted to appropriations over the years that, NASA has become responsible for everything, and that means that they can't really focus on doing any one thing particularly well. So we came up, first of all, with this concept that would return us to the laser focus that we had when we went to the moon. Pioneering sounds like a simple concept. It is. It's very American. I think people grasp it. But there's four real discrete phases to that. The first thing you need to do is you need to figure out where you need to go look and how to access that.
Yeah.
Then you need to figure out, how are you going to explore that? Then how are you going to utilize that? And then once you're into utilization, how do you transition to doing the mission with other parts of government, with commercial enterprise? I think NASA has shown some encouraging ability to commercialize in recent years. And so stepping through those four steps so that you're always pushing on to that next destination. And I think if you have that focus, then it becomes pretty clear as you lay out your 10-year plans, your 20-year plans, your 30-year plans, where you have to go and in what order you have to go there. So that's the first thing, is getting that laser focus like we had when we went to the moon. People ask us all the time, and you hear this all the time, Jim, why can't we go? Why can't we do that again? And the answer is we can, but we have to get focused.
I think the focusing part, Elliot, is so cool. I think you mentioned in your View From Here column, or I don't know if it was Brendan's column or what, about the old story we tell about the janitor during Apollo that was asked, what is your job here? And he says, my job is to get us to the moon.
That's right. And, it's hard to imagine walking into, any two or three places in NASA today and thinking you're going to get the same answer from anybody, much less such a crystal clear answer.
And pioneering with access, exploration, utilization, transition, you don't say that we should next be going to the moon, or we should next be going to Mars, or you don't discuss the attributes of the positives and negatives of visiting an asteroid. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we have this focus on pioneering. And as you say, the rest of it should fall out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And if you think about, we're doing some pretty exciting things. Let's not lose focus or sight of the fact that the discovery of ice on Mercury, the
right.
work that's being done by the Mars Curiosity. I mean, there are some really exciting things going on. But if you think about all the places within our own solar system that there are to explore, and how little of that we've really got a good handle on so that we know what we should be exploring next, this kind of a focus really opens up the horizon to say, wow, there's a lot of places we need to go check out and figure out where they fit in the scheme of things in terms of helping humanity to become a spacefaring civilization.
Well, and convincing folks to do that, we all have certain arguments we like to make, and very early on in your report is setting the stage for the details to follow in terms of your strategic and your tactical recommendations. You talk about these four myths that are out there that so many of us in the space advocacy community tout as if only we just did this, then all of our problems would be solved. Could you run through those myths real quick?
Boy, I don't have the report in front of me, so I'm going to screw this up. But I know one of the myths is that you've got to have a president who has got a strong support for space, who's going to be out there and being in front of things, being your champion.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you have to be able to extend beyond any particular administration. John Kennedy, yes, was a great champion, but let's not forget the man got shot.
Yeah.
And so you had to be able to go through a Lyndon Johnson and a Richard Nixon, and to have the programs continue to have support. And so it's that focused purpose that allows the country to get behind it that's actually more important. Certainly doesn't hurt to have a president who's a strong champion, but it's really a myth to think that that's the only thing that's going to get us there. And so there are these types of mythologies that we have explored over time.
Well, that if only Congress were to be in favor of it, if only the public were to be more supportive, was two of the other ones. I think the other one was that it's all too expensive to do. And then clearly, as you look through history and all of that, the numbers, if we only focused, if we just gave it the priority that it needed, then maybe it isn't too expensive. Maybe we can't afford to do all this and everything else that a great nation can do.
Sure. If you look at you know, the budgets over time, and that's one of the things that we laid out in great detail in the report. And you trace the differences between what's, you know, submitted by a president versus what actually happens in, you know, subsequent years. And you can see all these different ways that the budget would have played out. But really what we've seen is that support has been about the same, and it's been relatively flat. We've seen other areas of the budget that have been allowed to grow astronomically, and we can certainly get into the fiscal cliff and all the consequences of things that have been allowed to grow. But, you know, the public support has actually been pretty consistent for NASA and at pretty consistent levels throughout the space age. People were not universally enthralled with the idea of going to the moon when we did. There were a lot of people that didn't think that was a good idea. And so, you know, having a focus and a sustainable plan is really more important than trying to get that out there.
And Elliot, we'll just get people whipped up about that. By right there. We'll take our 5-minute built-in hold here. When we come back, we'll talk about the strategic recommendations that's in the report. As we continue to talk to Elliot Pullum of the Space Foundation, stand by for news, weather, and sports, your updates on everything going on. We'll be back in just a few moments. I'm Jim Banky. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk here on WMMB. The phone lines and online inbox are open for your questions and comments. The phone number is always 321-768-1240. The email address, spacetalking@aol.com. A quick shout out to and best wishes and bon voyage to Bill Mick and the rest of the WMMB family who are out in the Atlantic Ocean on a great cruise this week. Hope they're doing a great time. We're trying to keep the Fort Man back here. On the phone with us from Colorado Springs, the CEO of the Space Foundation, Elliot Pullum. We're talking about a report that the foundation released this week called Pioneering, Sustaining U.S. Leadership in Space, the idea that pioneering become the laser focus of the space agency so that you can go out to the Kennedy Space Center and ask anyone what their job is, and they'll say, my job is to pioneer space. That means a lot. It's more than just exploration and discovery. And that's the gist of what we've been talking about. Elliot, as you join us here again for the second half, your report then goes into four strategic recommendations as to really, you know, okay, now we know what we want to do. Now, how do we need to get there? And amend the Space Act, streamline the National Civil Space Enterprise, stabilize NASA leadership and planning, stabilize NASA funding. Talk a little bit about that. First of all, how do we amend the Space Act and what should it say?
Well, you know, the Space Act has been amended so many times since 1958 that it basically says, you know, pretty much everything to anybody that wants to look for something in there. So, you know, you start off by getting this laser focus for the agency, and then you say, okay, let's get rid of all the things that don't allow us to do that. So, you know, as I think about this, I like to think about NASA's purpose being to pioneer outward. And so if it's looking inward, we've got other agencies to do that. You know, we have commercial companies to do remote sensing. We have the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration to do Earth sensing, weather forecasting, and so forth. We have the National Reconnaissance Organization. We have all sorts of private enterprise. So strip that out and say we're going to let somebody else do that, and we're going to use those resources for pioneering. So getting that focus so that you can really get the agency focused. You know, as I think about this, Jim, it occurs to me that the recommendations really kind of fall into, you know, a laser-sharp focus, which is something that every world-class organization has,
right.
A good management structure that supports pursuit of that purpose, and then a competent and reliable financial approach that allows you to bring the resources to bear. So those are the things that fall into these recommendations. You know, in terms of managing the enterprise, before I even go into that, I should say that, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of is that we really looked across government for government solutions that work, so that mm-hmm. there's nothing that we're proposing that people are going to say, oh, my gosh, we can't do that. You know, everything that we've identified are things that are being done successfully in other parts of government. So, for example, having the NASA administrator appointed for a multi-year term that's not politically driven, a 5-year or 6-year or 7-year renewable term. Where do we get that? We got that from the Naval Nuclear enterprise management. Okay. I mean, if you look at the Chief of Naval Nuclear Operations, it's an 8-year appointment. Why is that? Highly technical position. Somebody is required who's extremely competent technically. It's something that needs continuity. It's nuclear stuff. It's very serious. You can't screw around with it. And we think that's probably a pretty good way to look at the appointment of NASA administrator as well. And so there are a number of things that are in there that point to, you know, how do you manage the enterprise?
Elliot, on that point, a lot of folks have used, especially with this legislation introduced among others by our own Congressman Posey, to depoliticize NASA. And I don't believe you use that term in the report. Is that what we're talking about, to get NASA away from the political side, to get NASA away from senators designing new rockets?
Well, we don't want to remove, accountability to government. I mean, the agency has to be accountable and can't operate outside of oversight. But what we need to have is a capability to transition from election to election, to administration, have a plan that the administration and Congress have agreed to, have a commission, if you will, that reviews this plan constantly, that can provide feedback to both Congress and the administration independently about how NASA is doing, so that people in Congress don't have to be technical experts, and then be able to pursue programs over multi-year periods using multi-year management techniques, multi-year funding techniques, long lead authorization, multi-year procurement, revolving funds, and so forth, so that the programs are in place to run over a period of time without the year-to-year perturbation or election-to-election perturbation. So you can certainly think of that as depoliticizing. We want our political leaders very much involved in this, but what we want to have is the structures that tend to perturb getting anything done. We'd like to have those changed.
You know, all these things you're talking about, I'm sitting here thinking, and Elliot, I'm reminiscing about when we worked together and I worked for you. You know, I remember sitting in a conference room. I think we were up in the mountains and outside Denver, and your current vision for the Space Foundation, I remember helping write back then. You'd made the laser focus vision. You stuck to the vision. You consolidate what you're doing. You got the funding, and you know, Space Foundation is doing very well. Thank you very much. Businesses are the same way. I look at what this Golden Spike Corporation and the Planetary Resources that are looking. The one group trying to get men, people back to the moon privately that they announced this week. You look at Planetary Resources trying to go after an asteroid and mine its platinum resources. You read all the background on this, and they're all doing the same thing that pioneering is all about, and they've got the laser-sharp focus, and they've got the funding, and they've got the singularity of purpose. It just seems to make so much common sense that NASA should follow that course. But then when you use common sense in Washington and all of that, those seem to not go well. So now you've got this report. We've got a few minutes left. What do you do with it next? What's the next step? Who needs to do what with this to make it happen?
Well, you know, we've done a lot of socializing of the report. We actually met with Charlie Bolden and Lori Garver and some of their leadership team almost a week before we released it to walk them through it so they wouldn't be surprised by it. And frankly, they were quite warm to it. They didn't throw their hands up and say, oh, my gosh, this is critical to NASA.
Yeah.
I think they realize that we're looking at a 43-year sweep in history and something that, you know, needs to be addressed as a national priority. We had a great attendance at the rollout up on Capitol Hill there in the Senate Russell Building. Most of the foreign space agencies were there, contractor representatives, all the staffers and so forth, and that was very, very well received. Lots of encouraging remarks, good questions at the rollout. And then I spent the next 3 days beating out my shoe leather, going up and down Capitol Hill, meeting with various staffers, committee staffers, the key representatives on the key committee, a number of members of Congress, a number of senators, to get this in front of them and talk about it and socialize it and answer their questions and hopefully get their support for it. There's certainly a lot of interest in doing something. There is a movement afoot in the House side to include some language that would look like a number of our recommendations in an upcoming authorization bill. As you mentioned, there was another report that came out the day after ours.
Yeah, how'd that align with yours? I think it aligned somewhat, but it took a little different tact.
Well, I thought our report was a lot more constructive and offered a lot more solutions.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I agree.
And, you can be critical all day, and you can criticize the agency, you can criticize whoever you want to criticize, but at the end of the day, you know, we really need to stop yelling at each other and come together around some solutions. And
yeah.
So our report has really been about providing some ideas on solutions. We want to continue the dialogue. We'll continue to meet with people. People that want to comment on the report, you know, first of all, you can download a copy from our website,
yep.
spacefoundation.org. You want to send us some feedback, we'll take all the feedback we can get. We've set up a special email account. It's pioneering@spacefoundation.org. If you're into short feedback, you can give us a hashtag Pioneer Space on Twitter. We will certainly continue to surface this in public forums and be out speaking about it, and we'll be talking about it at the symposium in April after people have had a good period of time to digest it. But, you know, we need people to get interested, to read it, to give us their feedback. People that see something that they like, let people know that you like it.
Yeah. Give me 30 seconds on a tangent here. What about aeronautics? It's one-fourth of the acronym. It's 3% of the budget. And by reading your report, it looked like aeronautics ought to just go to someone else. Not go away, but go somewhere else. Could you just spend 30 seconds on that?
Yeah, I mean, there are other places in government that do these things. So should NASA be involved in studying the air traffic control system? No, you've got a Federal Aviation Administration. That's a federal FAA matter. So with everything that NASA is doing, you take a look at it and you say, does it belong in the pioneering space? And if it doesn't, where does it belong? And other places in government, other places in industry.
Well, you know, I exchanged email. I don't know if you saw that with your communications director, Janet Stevens. And I said, well, what if you take aeronautics out? Do you have to change the name of NASA because NASA, the first day is for aeronautics? She came back very smartly with a great answer. She says, well, I don't think AT&T is doing telegraphs anymore either. So you don't have to.
She's pretty witty.
She's really good. So you don't have to change the name to lose aeronautics, but I would hate to lose that capability within our nation. So again, with about another minute left, so now you talked about what you want to do, the laser focus. You gave some specific recommendations. There was a whole host, I think, I'm looking at your outline, 10 tactical recommendations, very specific things dealing with the International Space Station, dealing with roles with industry, dealing with the standards and regulations. I mean, very much in the noise, inside baseball kind of stuff. Again, I know you talked about digesting this, talking about it at the symposium next April. Ultimately, you want this to become a bill somewhere. I mean, you got about 20 seconds for a bill to – well, actually, we're going to take a break, Elliot. I'm sorry, we're timing is off here. I'm going to ask you that question when we follow up. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the conversation, get you updated on when the next launch is, and also do our five questions with Terminal Count with Elliot Pullen and find out what's on his mind. We'll be back after this short break. I'm Jim Benke. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240. Listen to Space Talk on the web at WMMBAM.com.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, reminding you that you can stay in touch with us throughout the week online. Go to the web, WMMBAM.com, keywords Space Talk. You can go to Twitter and follow us at Space Talking. And we also have a Space Talk page on Facebook. Let's take a quick moment now, look at the local launch forecast, what we can expect, when we can expect the next rocket to fly from Cape Canaveral. And we do have some updates for you on that. Late yesterday afternoon, United Launch Alliance officially announced that they were going to proceed with trying to get the Atlas V rocket off the ground before the end of the year. And we'll continue working toward a liftoff, which turns out to be this Tuesday, December 11th. The launch period extends for 5 hours, beginning at 1:03 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, extends till 6:03. Now, if you'll recall, the launch had been put on hold for several weeks following a problem with the Delta IV launch in October. It was on that mission to deploy a GPS navigation satellite that the Delta IV's upper stage experienced a problem that caused it to lose thrust in its RL-10 engine. By burning the engine for a little longer, the satellite was delivered into its proper orbit. It's working fine. But because of those difficulties and the similarities between the Delta IV and the Atlas V, officials on the ground wanted to take some time to understand the problem before clearing any more rockets to fly. That investigation continues, but they know enough to know that the Atlas V is okay to launch. Turned out there was a fuel leak in the thrust chamber of the Delta IV upper stage, so they've checked the Atlas V. It looks good to go. The Atlas V is to carry the Air Force's orbital test vehicle into Earth orbit. It's a classified research mission. It'll be the third flight of the program and the second flight, the first reuse for this particular mini space plane tucked in atop the Atlas V. So again, summing up, the last launch of the year now set for this Tuesday at 1:03 p.m. Eastern Standard. We've got some wet weather to keep an eye on during the next couple of days. 45th Space Wing's Weather Squadron says there is only a 40% chance of acceptable conditions during the five-hour launch period on Tuesday. We'll do our best to keep you updated with the countdown on Tuesday. We'll try to break in with some live coverage of the final few minutes to let you know when to go outside and watch the launch, so do stay tuned to WMMB. In the meantime, for more information about these and all the various other launches scheduled around the world, do jump on the web to WMMBAM.com. Keywords, Space Talk. Look for the link to our launch forecast. Elliot Pullum from the Space Foundation was in Colorado Springs with just a few minutes left. Elliot, before we play Terminal Count with you, one quick question to follow up what I was asking before the break. You've done the report. You're shopping it around. You're talking about it. You're digesting it. Again, what do you expect or what would you like to see happen and when? Does this need to become legislation written into an authorization bill this session, next year, a year from now? What's the big look on that?
Well, you know, we obviously put about a year's worth of work into this, and so we would be delighted if somebody just stood up and saluted and said, this is it, this is what we're going to go do. We all know democracy is a messier process than that, and so we're going to continue to engage with the agency, with Congress, with the administration, with the industry, and keep the conversations going so that people can come together around those things that they find resonate with them in the report. And, you know, we don't expect that everything we've recommended is necessarily going to be happen, but if we can force a conversation that results in the nation moving forward, then we're going to feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Good stuff. Okay, Elliot, let's lighten things up. It's now time for what we called, Elliot, since we started this before you were on, Terminal Count. It's our new feature at the end of Space Talk, in which we ask five simple questions of our guests to get to know them a little better. This is not a quiz. There are no right or wrong answers. This is not a contest, so please, no wagering. All right, Elliot, here you go. Here's your first question. Coolest rocket?
That would be Zefram Cochrane's Phoenix.
Good for you. There you go. All right. First, the Phoenix, by the way, the first warp drive engine, 2063, right?
Very good.
Oh, yeah, we've got a few years to go. I remember watching Star Trek First Contact with the boys in the theater and thinking that these guys would actually be alive in 2063 and what it would be like. It's kind of a weird thought. All right, next question. First launch that you saw or remember?
Well, obviously watched all the early launches, Apollo launches on television. First big launch in person was STS-29, Return to Flight.
Oh, Return to Flight Discovery, 1988. Very good. Were you at the press site for that, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, watched your clothes vibrate, I'm sure.
That was a lot of fun.
Most prized space memorabilia. Wow, I bet you have something neat.
Well, you know, I've actually not collected things myself. We've been collecting things for the Space Foundation for our museum, and we've got a lot of really neat things. But I myself don't personally collect.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll bet your answer would be the entire new museum out in Colorado Springs. How's the attendance going?
I can't wait for you to come see it.
Oh, I really want to see. I watched the TV video report, by the way, that they did when it opened. And as you know, I did some writing for you for that. And it was fun to see some of those posters up in the background. Best space. Oh, gee, I'm asking Elliot Pullum to answer this question. Best space TV series or movie?
Firefly.
Ooh, a surprise. A surprise. Wow, because you and I are Star Trek fans big time.
You got to be a fan of everything, but you just got to love what Joss Whedon did with that series, and hopefully his success with the Avengers will allow him to reopen that window and give us a little bit more of the antics of Serenity and her crew.
Oh, that was a great, great series. Too short-lived. I've got all my boys watching it now, too. They've fallen in love with it as well. All right, well, given your report, I don't know about this question, but we've been asking folks, Moon, Mars, or beyond?
All the above.
Yeah, it has to be, doesn't it?
It has to be.
It doesn't stop with the Moon. It doesn't stop with Mars. I mean, we're already thinking about the moons of Jupiter, and I mean, you just keep stepping out, and it just doesn't stop until we get out to the farthest way. So, All right, Elliot, well, I really do appreciate you being back on the program two times in a single season. It's great. Congratulations on the report, Brendan, and the Hall of the Gang. Everybody did a great job with it, and I really do wish you well, and I hope people read this thing and that it grabs hold and makes a difference.
Well, thanks, Jim. We really appreciate it, and I just want to wish you and all your listeners down on the Space Coast a terrific holiday season.
We really do appreciate it, and happy holidays to everyone out there, and we'll hope to see you very soon. There goes Elliot Pullum from the Space Foundation. Again, the report about pioneering, spacefoundation.org. Do go online and download a copy of it. It's free. It's out there for everyone to grab. And please look at it and read it and digest it and see what you think. I really would really do highly recommend it. Well, okay, let's look ahead now. Next week on Space Talk, we'll be joined by Tara Rutley. She's NASA's Associate Program Scientist for the International Space Station at the Johnson Space Center. Tara's going to give us an update on how science operations are going aboard the orbital outpost. And we'll be sure to ask her about how Florida researchers and organizations such as CASIS, tied to Space Florida, is involved in the space station. By the way, there are some great opportunities to see the space station fly over Brevard County this week, pretty much every night after sunset this week. For specific times, you can go online to the Space Talk webpage at WMMBAM.com. Or if you have the NASA app installed on one of your mobile devices, you can get the times there. If you've never taken the time to see it fly overhead, I highly recommend it. That's it for now. Space Talk, a production of Mylas Solutions, and is brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. My thanks to Sean Williams for manning the op station for today's program. Please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now. MMB presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck program. I'm Jim Bankey, and we'll talk to you again real soon.